Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Seattle Seahawks making moves on the first official day of free agency, re-signing players, signing new free agents, including a starting safety and an old friend on the offensive line, while somewhat surprisingly extending a young, polarizing pass rusher, and at the same time saying goodbye to a legend for the second time. Recapping a busy day for the Seahawks on the first day of the new league year, up next on this audio-only edition of Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
Be sure to subscribe on whichever podcast platform you're listening on so you never have to miss future episodes. If you like what I do, leave a five-star review. Much appreciate that. And if you want to hear exclusive ad-free episodes, you can sign up on Spotify for less than $1 a month. And for video shows, the foundation of Seahawks Forever, be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Well, it's a busy day for John Schneider and the folks over at VMAC as the Seahawks get to the heavy lifting of filling out the roster on the first official day of free agency as the new league year began today at 1 o'clock Pacific time. And all the talk the first 48 hours, the legal tampering period, was what are the Seahawks doing? Why aren't they doing more? They sign Leonard Williams. They keep him in the fold. And John Schneider has said that was a priority. And some of you think $21.5 million is too much for him at the age of 30. To which I would say, how much too much? It was only $500,000 more than he was making on his last contract. Still playing at an extremely high level. Defensive linemen have shown they can play into their mid-30s. He just turned 30 and was Seahawks' best defensive lineman after coming over in the midseason trade last year. And John Schneider had stated it was a priority. And he was very upfront and honest. Not just that he was a player that they needed from a personnel standpoint, from a competitive standpoint, but that the compensation mattered. That the fact that they gave up a second round pick to get him and a fifth mattered. That they wanted that to pay off. They wanted that to have value moving forward. And Leonard Williams was a player that he liked and has liked for a long time and has said he spent 2 years trying to get him. So he's in the fold. And then the Noah Fant signing, some of you have called that an overpay as well. 2 years, $21 million. To which I say, we'll see. We'll see. For what he's done on the field so far, yeah, $10.5 million average annual value is a lot. It's more than they were paying Will Disley, and he was cut because it was too much. But for what Noah Fant can do, and he talked on the record today about how excited he is about new offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb and his plans and his philosophy of getting the most out of players, putting players in a position to succeed, that, you know, they're very, very excited about that. And Noah Fant is excited about it as well and said he had other opportunities and chose to come here. He's comfortable here. And he thinks he can succeed in this offense. If Noah Fant goes out and catches 80 balls, all of a sudden $10.5 million average annual value is a bargain for a tight end. But that was leading up to today. And then we don't know and may never know if there were other players that the Seahawks pursued. Right, we had heard there was interest in Jeremy Chinn, but he got $7 million. That seems like more than people were expecting. they may have wanted to get in on the guard market, but it went crazy as soon as Robert Hunt signed for 5 years and $100 million. And John has talked before, I've listened to interviews recently with him, where he talks about how it's a fluid process. I think as fans, sometimes we think, here's our plan, and I'll do it here. I'll do it here sometimes. Here's my offseason plan. Here's what I would do. Here's my mock draft. And we get set on that, and we get excited about what we think they need to do to improve. But then what happens when it doesn't go according to plan? Because it takes two to tango. It takes three to tango, really. And what I mean by that is the player has to want to be here. And there are also other teams that want these players too. And while the Seahawks cleared a bunch of cap space heading into free agency, about $55 million, they also had the lowest number of contracted players in the league. So a lot of that salary cap was going to have to go to just roster construction, filling out the roster, adding bodies, adding depth, signing guys with upside, protecting yourself. That's what I mean by heavy lifting. That's kind of the blue-collar work of free agency that isn't as exciting for us fans. We want splashy signings. I'll talk a little bit more about this in my next video show, and I'll show you the chart. There is a direct correlation between teams who, year in, year out, spend the most in free agency, and then those teams' one-loss record. Typically, the teams that spend the most in free agency do not win. And I think which one is it? Is it the chicken or the egg? I think the teams, go look at what's been happening in the last 2 days. The teams that have made the splashiest signings are the bad teams that are trying to get better for the most part because they have cap space, because they don't have any good players. But it also signals that they haven't drafted and developed players well, and the good teams have. And so they took care of two of their big priorities. You know, it's been reported they wanted Colby Parkinson, and he signed for more than they wanted to pay him to go to the Rams. So they pivoted and signed Noah Fant. Did they prefer Parkinson over Fant? We don't know, but they got Fant and they got Williams, and those were two big ones. Now, the reason so many of you, me included, to be honest, are nervous right now is because we don't have any starting linebackers. We don't. Doesn't look like they have an interest in bringing Devin Bush back. I don't think he showed enough last year to warrant it anyway. Jordan Brooks goes to the Dolphins. They miss out on Patrick Queen. Did they attempt to sign Patrick Queen? That seemed like the natural connection with Mike McDonald, the coach here. Did they just not want to pay him what he got? We don't know, and we might never know. And then we knew there were reports last week that Bobby Wagner probably was not in the plans with a new young coach and going a new direction again. Those reports came to fruition today. Bobby Wagner signing with, you guessed it, the Washington Commanders, new head coach Dan Quinn. Ken Norton Jr. is on the staff there. He gets $6 million guaranteed, up to $8.5 million. That makes sense. Happy for Bobby. That makes total sense. He knows the scheme. Quinn trying to establish a new culture there, needs a leader like Bobby. And here's the rub. Team starting from scratch, starting over, rebuilding. So they're in a position to where they can live with Bobby's shortcomings. Teams are going to pick on him in coverage. Well, maybe Dan will have a better plan for him than Carroll and his staff did last year. Or maybe he's just willing to live with that because he'll take his upside in the run game and his presence in the locker room, and that's worth it. Bobby extremely classy in the way that he said goodbye to Seattle again. Love the way he handled that. It just makes sense. You know, fans are going to be mad again, but from the minute the season ended last year, I would have expected Bobby to not be back again. They needed to go a different direction. Now, total house cleaning is a little scary, but we saw last year with the defensive line. And the linebackers a little bit different because they flushed out that defensive line group last year. You need to go get five guys now. You really only need to get two at linebacker. There's some interesting youth there. You know, I really like the Drake Thomas signing last year when they poached him off the Raiders practice squad as they were trying to pass him through waivers. And we'll talk about linebacker a little bit more a little bit later. But here's what they got done today. First of all, they signed a familiar face to one of the coaches anyway on the coaching staff, Nick Harris. Husky fans will remember him. Two-time All-Pac-12 center for the Huskies. Played some guard and center. Undersized, 6'1", 295, but that's something that Scott Huff has had success with as an offensive line coach in college. Not being brought in to be the starter. This move, so Harris, a fifth-round draft pick out of Cleveland in 2020 out of the University of Washington, signs a one-year deal, $2.5 million. It can max out at about $3.25 million. Four career starts. He's played in 40 games for Cleveland, but only four career starts. He's Evan Brown. He's this year's Evan Brown without as much starting experience as Evan Brown had. But he's here. First of all, I think it signals that they're going to give Olu Oluwatimi every opportunity to win that starting job. And that's good news. That coaching staff's been around for a few weeks now. If Scott Huff had taken a look at the tape and assessed the roster and didn't think Oluwatimi was going to be a fit for what he wanted to do, then they might have gone a different direction. And we still might see it in the draft. But I think Oluwatimi, I think this is good news. I'm pro Oluwatimi. I think he has the makings of a long-term solid starter at the pivot. Harris brought in for a little bit of depth at center and guard at a low number. Then they sign a safety, Rayshon Jenkins. He was here visiting on Monday after being released in Jacksonville for a cap casualty, just turned 30 years old. It's a two-year deal for Jenkins. Don't know the numbers yet. Fourth-round pick of the Chargers in 2017, but never got a chance to crack the starting lineup there for any length of time unless injury gave him opportunities because they had Derwin James and Nasir Adderley there. So he goes to Jacksonville in 2021 and makes some money. 4 years, $35 million deal with them. Last year, 76 tackles, two interceptions, 33 receptions allowed. That's 14th in the league at his position. There's some question as to where his best fit is. I have seen two analysts today say completely opposite things. One, that he might be better off as a free safety because Julian Love operates best close to the line of scrimmage. And then Sean Michael Duggar of The Athletic saying the exact opposite, that he thinks that Jenkins operates best close to the line of scrimmage. But here's the beautiful thing, is that both Love and Jenkins have shown over their career that they can play either or, that they are versatile. And so we really have to see. You know, I've seen some people give this signing a thumbs up and other people say that they think he's not a good player. We'll find out. Look what Mike McDonald did with Geno Stone, being a seventh round draft pick and coming out of nowhere. And one of the reasons he got the job is his reputation for developing players. Put this guy in the hands of Carl Scott and let's see what he can do. But it takes care of, for now, on March 13th, you have your two starting safeties. This would appear to close the door on the idea of Quandre Diggs coming back, in my opinion. And then they bring back, I said at the top, an old friend. Not that old, really. He just turned 32 or 31. George Fant is back. After starting 13 games at right tackle for the Texans last year, of course, you remember his story, undrafted free agent back in 2016, had a history as a tight end, was converted to offensive tackle by the Seahawks, played a little bit as a swing tackle, got a few starts when there were opportunities, but never really got a full-time opportunity when Mike Solari was here, so he left in free agency, signed with the Jets, got some money. Last year with the Texans, pretty good. You know, 53rd ranked tackle might not sound great, but 915 snaps at right tackle, three sacks allowed. 6'5", 322, guy that can play both tackle spots. And this was something, his specific name has been brought up over the last month or so by many. This was a role that needed to be filled this year, either through free agency or the draft. Makes more sense to do it in free agency. Get a veteran guy in the event that Abe Lucas isn't ready to start the season. That You know, remember the situation last year when Lucas gets hurt. You got Stone Forsythe, who was primarily a left tackle, having to move over to right tackle, competing with Jason Peters at the age of 42. So essentially, Fant in for Peters, and you save yourself 11 years. It's not bad. If Lucas isn't 100% healthy, could even give them the flexibility to start him on the pup list, because you would have Fant and Forsythe now at right tackle. They sign another tight end to go along with Noah Fant. Pharaoh Brown played his college football at Oregon, undrafted free agent 2017, spent some years with the Browns and Texans, and then last year with the Patriots, really established himself. I saw one reporter who covers the Patriots who said he was one of the few bright spots last year on a terrible New England offense, known for his blocking as opposed to his receiving skills. I think he only has, I thought I had it here in my notes, 54-ish career receptions. 6'6", 245, known as a good blocker, and that's what the Seahawks needed. Need someone now. They had that, you know, what we thought was a three-headed monster the last couple of years with Disley, Parkinson, and Fant, but never utilized properly. Maybe too many cooks in the kitchen. Now, yeah, Fant, who looks to be a featured tight end now. Maybe we'll see more 11 personnel under Ryan Grubb than we did under Shane Waldron. But now you have your blocking tight end for $3.2 million, much, much less than what they were paying Will Disley to be a blocking tight end. They also tendered Brady Russell today. So the tight end that they picked up off the Philadelphia Eagles practice squad at the end of training camp last year. So now you have three tight ends, and Tyler Mabry signed to a futures contract as well. And then they did some in-house work, re-signing Artie Burns, tendering Mike Jackson. So that basically now you have brought back your entire cornerback group from last year. And Mike Jackson's a guy that I'm excited to see what he can do under Mike McDonald. I'm telling you, I think Mike Jackson has a chance to push Reek Woolen at that right cornerback spot next year. Jackson, Reek, obviously the more explosive athlete, better in man-to-man coverage. Mike Jackson, a guy that's much, much more physical. I like the contrast in styles there. And then with Artie Burns showing he can play the slot last year, seems like he's been around forever. I think he's still just 28 years old. Just, you know, that kind of versatility has value. And I think also bringing those guys back signals to me that they intend to stick to the plan that the previous staff had begun last year, moving Colby Bryant from corner to safety full time. And I like Bryant's upside. So now you're talking about Love, Jenkins, and Bryant in your safety room. And don't forget Jonathan Sutherland, the undrafted free agent out of Penn State last year, who was taking first team reps at the latter part of training camp before he got hurt, spent last season on the practice squad. Interesting player there as well. Then they tendered John Rattigan, the fourth-year vet out of Army. Interesting move there to bring him back. I mean, they need linebackers, right? John Rattigan has shown he got more run last year in the preseason than he ever has before. Maybe they think he can play a little bit. They tender Miles Adams on that defensive line. A guy who's still young, really has some athletic upside, is like a, you know, penetrating three technique. Rotational tackle. So now you start to see there's some depth at that defensive tackle group. We're a far cry from where we were a year ago when they had gotten rid of everybody and we were rebuilding it from scratch. They had signed Draymond Jones in free agency, and then they were kind of going from there. By this time last year, they had Jones, Jaron Reed, not much else. Although Adams was part of that group at the time, and so was Brian Monet, who we knew was going to miss the season. And so now you're talking Leonard Williams, Draymond Jones, Jaron Reed, Cameron Young, last year's fourth-round pick. Mike Morris will be healthy this year, last year's fifth-round pick. Miles Adams in that group. Interesting. And then that edge group. You have now another move today. The Seahawks, this is the one that I teased was a little bit surprising, a very polarizing prospect. Darrell Taylor, extended by the Seahawks today. Haven't seen the terms of it yet. But he wasn't just tendered. He was a restricted free agent. They didn't just tender him. That would have required more money because he was a second rounder. I think it would have been a $6 million, right around $6.2 million to tender him as a second rounder. They extend him instead. saves them a little money, but also might lock him up for beyond this year. Second rounder in 2020, 21.5 career sacks. We've seen moments where he can really get after the passer. I'm encouraged by this because Mike McDonald had to sign off on this move, had to approve of this move, I think, for Schneider to make it happen. I mean, not contractually, but you know, Schneider wants to give McDonald the tools to succeed. He wants to give him players that he thinks he can work with. He must have endorsed Daryl Taylor here. And so now that edge group comes back intact. Nwosu, healthy after missing half last year. Boye Mafi on the other side, an ascending player. Daryl Hall, last year's second round pick. Daryl Taylor now, still in that group. So a lot done today, and yet they still, at the end of the day, if things ended today, they would have four comp picks next year. The max of four. A fourth, a fifth, and 2 6. Seahawks haven't had comp picks in a long time because they have typically signed more free agents than they've lost. But they've got some players that are in demand this year. And when you see now what the modus operandi might be for the rest of the offseason, there's a good chance they're going to end up with some extra draft picks next year, which could come in handy if next year's the year they decide it's time to go get a quarterback and move up. So a lot of work done today, but there are still people that are worried and upset. Obviously, interior offensive line, at guard. Greg Bell, the News Tribune today, said they need two starting guards. I think that's dismissing Anthony Bradford out of hand. I would hope that Scott Huff thinks that he likes what he sees in Bradford, because the physical upside there of what he does in the running game is enough that if you think he can be a pass protector, I really want to see them make that work. So in my opinion, there's only one really clear-cut starting opportunity. You can get that in the draft. You can get that with the first pick. Right now, as I sit here today, if I was going to do a mock draft with the moves they've made, I'm spending that 16th pick on an offensive lineman. And you might even be able to make the argument that you can have your pick of the best guard in the draft because it's such a good tackle class. The tackles are going to go. The quarterbacks are going to go early. Some of those edge guys are going to go. You might be staring at Troy Fautanu at 16, played for Scott Huff at the University of Washington. Some teams see him as a tackle. Others think he can be a dominant guard. He can play either or. He's a plug-and-play guy at 16 if you take him there. Even if you trade back a little bit, you still might have your pick of some of the best guards in the draft, if you're worried about that position. A guy, Graham Barton out of Duke, who can play tackle and guard. Physical. Mauler in the run game. Jackson Powers Johnson, 332 pounds, can play center or guard out of Oregon. Don't know if he fits the scheme, but he's a fan favorite. He's a mock draft favorite. Cooper Beebe out of Kansas. Tons of experience, over 50 starts in college, and really, at 330 pounds, looked much more athletic at the combine than people expected. You could conceivably, for those of you who are concerned, you could conceivably get to the draft and all you really need to focus on is interior offensive line and linebacker. And while you are going to hear, you've heard it already, you're going to continue to hear draft analysts say this isn't a good linebacker class. I disagree. Especially at Mike, middle linebacker, that guy that wears the dot, that guy that calls the signals, the guy that is going to be, you know, moving forward, north-south, playing the run, the Bobby Wagner. Last year it was weak. A lot of 220-pound weak side linebacker coverage types. I think it's pretty deep this year. Once you get to day two, I think what some of these draft analysts are talking about when they say it's a weak draft is at the top. You don't have any elite, legitimate, no doubt inside linebacker potential stars. So you're not going to get a first round guy. You rarely do these days anymore. Anyway, you might not even get a second round guy, but that's going to leave a lot of value and a lot of talent, I think, once you get to the third round and beyond, where the Seahawks have two picks in the third round. Guys like Junior Colson, Cedric Gray, Jalen Ford, Javon Solomon, Cedric Gray. Later on, Tommy Eichenberg, Trevin Wallace, who they interviewed at the Combine out of Kentucky. Tyrese Knight out of UTEP, a big middle linebacker who they're bringing in for a top 30 visit. You can get those guys on day two and day three. They could double up at that position like they did the year they needed edge rushers, and they took Daryl Taylor and Alton Robinson. They've done it with other positions in other years. And they might not be done yet. I mean, John Schneider is going to continue to work the value phase of free agency. There's still guys out there. They might have interest in Devin White, former first-round pick. They might have interest in a veteran like Devondre Campbell, who was just released officially by the Packers in a salary cap move. First team All-Pro in 2021. 31 years old, can still play. Played for Seahawks linebacker coach Nick Olivadotti in Green Bay when he had his best years. Guy like that might make some sense. So they'll add there. There's post-June 1 cuts, potentially. There's cuts at the end of training camp. They could trade for a player. And obviously, they could focus on the draft. I think Schneider's going to continue operating in a way over the next month that when we get closer to the draft, we're all going to be able to look at it and say, okay, here's the focus. And our needs are going to be minimized by then. We can just go into the draft and take a bunch of guards and centers and another swing tackle candidate and double up at linebacker. Take two or three, sign a bunch in undrafted free agency. Remember, an area where the Seahawks have excelled over the last 15 years. And undrafted free agency is about recruiting. When you get to it, some of these guys slip away from the draft. Guess what? Those players are going to sign where they have the best opportunity to make the roster. So don't freak out. A lot of people are slamming John Schneider and his inactivity. I get it. Splashy signings are fun. But remember that correlation. The teams that usually spend the most money in free agency don't win. They don't win. And then I'm going to leave you with this. There's the thought, and I know you don't want to hear it. And I'll talk about this more extensively on a video show coming up in the next few days. This may be a two-year process. It's not a rebuild. Doesn't need to be. There's enough talent on the roster. You can compete. But it's a brand new staff, first-time head coach. First time in 15 years that we've moved on from a legendary head coach. I don't think anyone went into this offseason with the coaching change thinking, hey, Schneider's just going to figure out a way to wave his magic wand, sign a couple of players. Seahawks are going to win the Super Bowl in 2024. That was never reasonable. This might take 2 years. You've got to see what this staff can do. Let them work together, develop some players, see what you have. And then next year, with a full assortment of draft picks, maybe some extra comp picks. And even though right now on the books, if you look at over the cap, they have about $50 million in cap space for next year, that doesn't seem like a lot. But once again, they have levers they can pull. They have contracts they can redo. They have players they can release. And then in 2026, they have $230 million available. They have hardly anybody under contract beyond 25. And that's what allows you to sign big deals, because you go with the low cap hit in year one. You can bury some of that stuff in the second year. So this may be a two-year process. And so not panicking, not going out and trying to feel like you have to make a bunch of splashy moves to like show yourself as a GM. I'd be more worried about what's happening right now if Schneider was out there trying to prove that I'm the guy in charge now. He seems to me as if he's operating the same way he always has. And that's encouraging. They're going to make, you know, more moves. They're going to be shrewd. They're going to fit their style of player. They're going to be frugal. Not because they want to be cheap, but because they want to be measured. This season coming up might look a lot more like 2011 than 2012. Coming up later this week, I will do an updated depth chart and a new mock draft as needs start to crystallize. Let me do this, though, before I get off the air. Let me just check Twitter, see if I miss any breaking news that I can react to, because in the last show, 2 minutes after I stopped recording, Damian Lewis left for Carolina. yeah, it does not look like the Seahawks have done anything after I hit record. Okay. All right. That's good. Be sure to subscribe to whichever podcast platform you listen to, and head on over to YouTube if you haven't already and subscribe to the channel there so you get video episodes, because that's really what I do. Just want to hop on and give a little ear candy to those of you who are loyal audio listeners. Thank you for doing that. And again, remember, if you want to hear episodes without ads, you can subscribe on Spotify. It's only 99 cents a month right now. I'll have the link for that in the description. And always remember to follow me on Twitter, @SeahawksForever. Until next time, forever and always, go Hawks. Thanks for listening.